Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Every day when I wake up, it's like, how do you function? You know, my youngest son asked me if I wanted him to come home, to be home. And I said, no. I said, at least at school you have distractions. I said, I finally went back to work just because I couldn't sit at home and do nothing anymore.
On the evening of Saturday, September 8th, 2018, Dan Jarski was at his home in Grant Park, Illinois with his son DJ, while his wife Janice went to take care of her father in a neighboring town. The next morning, he fed their dog, took the key to his van and his driver's license, and left. Dan left his wallet and cell phone at home. His vehicle was recovered a few days later at a state park. Law enforcement agencies have conducted extensive searches for Dan using ATVs, drones, dogs, boats, and more. But no trace of Dan has been found. Dan's wife Janice is looking for answers about why Dan disappeared and what may have happened to him. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 143 of The Vanished, Dan Jarski's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. 62-year-old Dan Jarski had recently retired from teaching and was enjoying his retirement doing all of the things he loves. In addition to spending time with his sons, Dan enjoyed going to flea markets and antique shows. Dan also enjoyed looking for old bottles and hunting asparagus. At the time of his disappearance, dove hunting season had just begun at the nearby state park where the Jarski family enjoyed many outdoor activities. But Dan was not known to own any guns or go hunting. We spoke to Dan's wife Janice about the events leading up to his disappearance and asked her what took place prior to the day he left.
Actually, leading up to his disappearance was completely uneventful. We have a son that we just took to college on the 25th of August, and he's retired, so he kind of comes and goes as he pleases. I work, and I also take care of my dad at his house at least 2 days a week. We have an adult son that lives with us. He's 21. The day before he disappeared, he does antique shows during the summer, and he had been to a show on that Saturday. It was awful, so he came home early. My son and I were both home. We talked to him for a little bit. I left at about 6:30, so this was September 8th. I left about 6:30 to go to my dad's. I was taking him to do something the next day, so I left to spend the night at my father's, who lives about an hour away. My son, DJ, was here with him, and they talked for a little bit. He called and talked to his sister that evening as well. They had an upcoming concert that they had bought tickets for, and they were talking about that. I know that he had said that he was going to make sure that he dropped off the tickets at his mother's house, because that's a little bit closer for his sister to pick up so that she could have the tickets in her possession. And that was it. That was the last we heard from him. My son went upstairs to his bedroom at about 7:30, 8 o'clock, something like that, on the evening of the 8th. Dan was downstairs watching TV. My son came downstairs, he said, at maybe 1 o'clock in the morning to get something to drink or eat. Dan was, he assumed, in the bedroom because the dog, who doesn't go anywhere without Dan, was not in the front room, but the door was closed. In the morning, DJ said that he said he woke up about 9 o'clock or so. I think I called him at about 10:30 because he was sick, and I was just calling to see how he was feeling. And he said, have you talked to Dad? And I said, no, why? And he's like, well, he's not home. And I don't remember him saying anything like he was going anywhere. But Dan would go to flea markets, estate sales, sometimes very early in the morning. And if we were asleep or whatever, he wouldn't wake us. And I said, well, that's probably, you know, he's probably at the flea market. Let me know what from you hear from, when you hear from him. And I never heard from him. About 4:30, I think I called DJ a couple times. About 4:30, we really both started to kind of get worried because anything that he would have been doing would have been done. He told me that Dan had left his phone at home, which was not really unusual. We had just gotten him a smartphone like in May.
Even though no one actually saw Dan on September 9th, this is how Janice knows he was home.
We know the day of the 9th, which was that Sunday, he was here on Sunday morning because we know he fed the dog. Because if she doesn't get fed by 7 o'clock, she will wake up everybody in the house. Considering that she allowed my son, who was upstairs, and she, you know, he's been home by himself, whether I'm taking care of my dad and Dan's at a show or, you know, when we took his brother to college, whatever. If he's in charge of watching the dog, he knows that she will not let him sleep. Normally it's earlier than that. Normally it's about 6:30. She will sit at the bottom of the stairs and she will bark until you wake up and feed her and let her out. Considering that the dog did not wake him up at all, we know that Dan fed her in the morning.
After Dan's disappearance, they were able to narrow down the timeline even further after spotting his van on camera.
And the photograph that they have of Dan on the overpass was at 8:14 a.m. The photograph over the overpass is probably maybe 10 or 11 miles from our home.
Janice told us that Dan was not interested in having a smartphone and had gotten one only a few months prior to his disappearance. While most of us would never leave our phones at home, Dan frequently left all but the bare necessities behind, which is exactly what he did on the day he vanished.
He was refusing to go to the dark side, but he was constantly, because he did outdoor flea markets, he was constantly calling us for weather updates. We're like, if we get you your own smartphone, you can do that on your own. It's time. So he didn't even text. When DJ told me that Dan's phone was at home, again, it was not usual for him to leave his other phone at home because all he did was make calls and talk with it. So he normally kept it next to his wallet. But now that he was actually had a Facebook page, which is new for him as well, he would actually kind of browse Facebook on his phone. So the phone was left on the table next to the couch, right where he normally sits. He's probably left his new phone home in the short time that he's had it as often as he ever left his old phone home because it just wasn't in the normal place. It wasn't abnormal. It wasn't something that I think he did intentionally. I just think it wasn't by his keys and by his wallet, so he just left. And he would definitely not come back for it because it was not an extension to his arm like our smartphones are to us. If he, you know, got a certain point and said, oh, I forgot my phone at home, depending on where he's going, he certainly wouldn't turn around and come and get it.
While it wasn't unlike Dan to leave his phone and wallet behind, Janice and DJ started to worry when they hadn't heard from Dan by the afternoon of September 9th. Dan's sisters and mother jumped right into action.
He has two sisters and his mother, just not to worry them, but, you know, hey, you know, Dad's not home. He didn't tell me where he's going. Have you guys heard from him today? I asked them actually to call a couple of his friends to see if they'd heard from him or talked to him. And the answer was no. I came home from my dad's house at this point. And in the meantime, his sister, I believe, had called the police and reported him missing. And then the police came to our home and took the report. His vehicle was gone. probably between the time that I had talked to DJ at 4:30 to the time I got home, which was maybe, I want to say maybe 6:30 or so, DJ called me and told me that Dan had left his wallet at home full of money, and that he had taken his driver's license, he had taken his car insurance card, and he had a lanyard that he had the van key that he took. It also had a truck key on it because he does his shows out of a truck. So he left all the keys home except for he took the key to the van off of the key ring. Now, all that sounds really odd, except my husband has in the past, and he hasn't done it in a while, but in the past, he used to go digging for old bottles. So he'd go to the river. Sometimes there were specific dump sites that he knew of, and you could actually dig into the ground or go across the, you know, through the banks of the rivers and maybe find old dumps, old bottles in the river or in dump sites. He normally did it with somebody else. And he, like I said, he's getting older. The friends that he used to go with, he doesn't do it very often. But, you know, when he would do this, he would leave he would take only what he absolutely needed to go. So that was our thought, is that he had maybe gone digging and just didn't tell us. So having his wallet home wasn't worrisome at first. But on that Monday, DJ and I went to the one digging site that DJ had actually been to with his dad, looked for his vehicle, because the two places that we knew of for certain, and one's private property. So obviously he's not supposed to be there. So he'd kind of try to park a little bit out of the way and then walk in. So we looked for his vehicle first. When we didn't see his vehicle, we actually parked and kind of walked in where DJ remembered the site was, and didn't find any evidence that anybody had been there. And obviously we didn't find his vehicle. From his friend that he had gone digging with at another site, which is quite a bit farther away, we actually called the detective, gave him the information of where the dump site was, you know, how to access it, where Dan would normally park. And he gave that to the local authorities, and they did the same thing. They went and looked all around in the parking lot, you know, looked where we had described the dump site and didn't find anything. So that was Monday.
After reporting him missing on September 9th, the search began for Dan and his vehicle.
I know that Kankakee County sheriffs have 5 detectives total. So it's very small. And, you know, he has been trying, and the Kankakee County sheriff, who is in charge of the investigation, got some pictures from me and made a missing Facebook page with a picture of him, picture of his vehicle, his license plate number, and put it on their website. In the meantime, the detective had called me and told me that they actually got a hit on his license plate very close to home. It was traveling in a specific direction. They had got it. It was a road that was going over an overpass. So they actually got a picture of his car going on both the east side and the west side. So they knew that he had actually gone over the overpass, not gotten onto the expressway. When I posted on my own personal Facebook page with the information that the detectives had with the pictures and everything, I posted that, you know, his vehicle was last seen traveling in this direction on this road. So a family friend's son, who had already been out just kind of randomly driving around — we live in the middle of nowhere. Our town has 1,200 people. It's nothing but farmland. You know, my son graduated from high school with 36 kids. So a very small town. And he just started randomly driving around. Well, when we said, you know, this is where we saw his vehicle, he started looking at the Kankakee River State Park, and he found his van. It was found at the state park. I think that the only thing that really bothered me totally was we could not find a key. Obviously, we couldn't find Dan. So the van was found, it was unlocked, with his ID in it. And so we couldn't find a key anywhere. And I told the detectives, even before they towed it away, I said, Dan almost always hid the key somewhere, like in the wheel well. He always had one of those hide-a-key things or whatever. We had been to the state park several times as a family. Actually, my son that just graduated high school, his senior pictures were taken there. We had gone biking and hiking on the trails, but the state park has kind of two different sections. One section that we were familiar with as a family has got a picnic area. It's got pavilions. It's got walking and biking trails. It's got a couple of different playgrounds and campsites. And that's the only place that we'd ever been to together. His van was found in an area. It was actually in a parking lot that is used for hunting. So during different hunting seasons right now, or at least back at the time on the 11th, it was dove hunting season. So the hunters would register with the conservation officers at the office, go and park in the parking lots, and then there was a trail into the woods. So as far as I know, Dan had never been there, but that doesn't mean that he hasn't ever been there. I've just never been there with him. And he was not a hunter, never had been hunting, no guns in the house, never have been. So it was odd to me that that's where it was. But I knew that he had gone looking for old bottles in riverbeds before. And I also knew, because we had just talked about, we had no rain. The Kankakee River, which is what this is, the park is surrounding, is so very low that you can almost walk across it in most places. And I thought, well, you know what? If he was going to go and look for bottles, this would be a perfect time. Everything would be exposed. So as soon as we found the van, or as soon as the kid's name was Brandon, as soon as Brandon found the van, he called me and then called the police. So I thought that that was it. We were going to find him right away. You know, found the van. He's never far away from his van. You know, he's got to be here. Whether he is still looking or he fell and hurt himself, you know, what he was injured in the woods or whatever, I knew we were going to find him, but that was not the case. They've had Illinois Search and Rescue. They've had Will County Search and Rescue. They've had, there's another acronym of people that have come out and searched, and they've grid searched, and they had cadaver dogs, and they had drones, and they had airboats, and they had kayaks. So they have, there's a ton of places to look in a state park.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Dan's red Chevy van was located in the Kankakee River State Park on September 11, 2018. Law enforcement officials found the vehicle unlocked and with no evidence that anyone else had been near the van.
Because he does a lot of traveling for the shows, he just recently did a show in Pennsylvania. If he ever locked himself out of his van accidentally, it would be pretty difficult for me to drive all the way to Pennsylvania to give him an extra key. So his extra key was almost always somewhere outside the vehicle for him to access. Before they towed the vehicle, I did tell the detectives that. And they said, okay, we'll look. Well, when I talked to him the next day, so that would have been Wednesday, I said, hey, did you find a key? Oh, well, I looked under the bumper. I said, well, that's not what I said. I said it was probably in a wheel well. I talked to the son that was away in college that next Saturday. And he said, Dad told me that he put the spare key in the spare tire. And I'm like, okay. So that evening when I got home, I emailed the detective and said, talk to my son, Jacob. He said the spare key is in the spare tire, which you have to lower from the undercarriage of the van. And one of the reasons that I wanted the spare key so badly, and you know, everything has significance for different people, but I'm like, you know what? If the car didn't start, if Dan went bottle digging or whatever he did, got back to the van and the car wouldn't start, either no gas, which was pretty unlikely. He was one of those guys that if it was a half a tank, it was an empty tank. But, you know, maybe the battery died, whatever, that we would know if maybe, and he had no phone, you know, would he be walking along the street, hitching a ride? We live in a small town. He'd take a ride from a farmer in a second. Or, you know, going to houses maybe that were close that he could maybe use their phone to say, my car is dead. And one of the other things that was very significant to us was before he left to go anywhere, whether it was someplace he had been a million times or someplace he was going for the first time, he always set his trip meter, always. So even when he was going to school where he worked, before he left the driveway, he hit the trip meter. So we didn't know whether the car was started, and we didn't know, because it's electronic, of course, what the trip meter was at, because it's 20 miles from our house to the where they found his car. If the trip meter was more than 20 miles, we knew he'd gone someplace else that morning. The police officers said that they looked and they didn't find the key. And I said, okay, fine. They released the vehicle to me last Thursday, and I had to have it towed to a dealership because these new cars, you have to have the car there to cut a new key. So they cut a new key on Friday. I told them, you know, make sure if you start it, you know, let me know if it starts and look at the trip meter and maybe take a picture, which they did. Car started right up. The trip meter only had 1.9 miles on it, which of course is more of a mystery than anything else, but brought the car home. And my son came home from college last weekend and he said, I'm so surprised they didn't find the key. I said, yeah, they said they looked. Yeah. He and his brother lowered the spare tire and it was there. So considering I told the detectives exactly where it was and what they had to do to access it, he said, and when I emailed the detective, he said, well, I put my hand up there and couldn't feel anything. Well, yeah, but you had to lower it down. And I told you that. And in the end, it really didn't, you know, the car started and the trip meter didn't tell us anything. So in the end, it really didn't matter, except that I had to pay $242 for a new key.
Despite the fact that Dan and Janice live in a small town, local and state law enforcement officials jumped into action to find Dan after his car was recovered at a nearby state park. No other trace of Dan has been found. So we asked Janice what her perception of law enforcement's involvement has been. This is what she had to say.
Personally, I think they have searched as far as they think he could have feasibly walked. So, and if they think he got in a car, where are you going to even start to look? So I do understand that. That Tuesday night when they found the vehicle, they had equipment there immediately. I think the vehicle was found like 1:30 in the afternoon, maybe. I think by 4 o'clock, they had everybody from every place they could pull in. They had an airboat. They had ATVs. They had UTVs. They had cadaver dogs. They had search dogs. I think that they had drones even that first day because the state park is wooded on one side, but right across the street, there's cornfields. And obviously you kind of can't ATV through somebody's crops. So they, you know, they had drones going over the fields right away. And they actually came back, not quite with the same force, but they did come back the next day and kind of did the same thing where they were going with, they did drones, they brought in dogs. The family, I think they're very frustrated. And I share that frustration. There's not a whole lot of direction to go. My first thought was that he went into the woods on purpose looking for something, whether it was looking for a dump site or going to the river or one of those. That's what I really thought when we found the van. I thought we were going to find him. But the fact that they haven't found a body or him alive, you know, with a broken leg or whatever, is what is a mystery to me. Because I would have thought that if he hurt himself between hunting season and all the searches that they have done, that they would have found something. And granted, it's been, you know, not quite 3 weeks since he disappeared. But considering they were out there in force that Tuesday, Wednesday, we were there Thursday. I know they were there Friday. And I know that the Illinois Search and Rescue came back and did a grid search on Saturday. They were pretty thorough in every direction, you know, from the street to the river. So, and the fact that he had access to money that he didn't touch, not only did he leave $900 in his wallet in the drawer, but he had a house fire. And the leftover money from that house fire was still in a saving and a checking account that he had access to. And he could have taken money out of there anytime. And he didn't touch the money. He didn't even take his credit card.
You've heard me talk about so many cases that didn't get much attention from law enforcement. Sometimes family members are told their loved one just walked away. This was not what happened with Dan's case. And Jana shared with me how supportive both law enforcement and the local community have been.
We organized our own search where we had a ton of volunteers. And actually, the Illinois State Police got involved. They actually contacted me, which was awesome, and helped us. We had a press conference on that day headed by, I think it's called the Missing Persons Network. Her name is Gia Hoffman. And she actually brought in volunteers of her own. She brought in Disaster Dogs is the name of the group that she works with. And they brought in dogs on that Thursday. We had the DNR working with us because technically ATVs are not supposed to be in that part. But she all gave them like day passes so that they could go and search with ATVs. We had people with personal boats and kayaks on that day. I think that we searched from, I think we finally actually got searching at about 9 o'clock. And I think that we searched till 5. And there was probably a group of 50 volunteers that we know of, that we actually got their name and phone numbers just in case something happened to them. We had some sort of organization going. And, you know, didn't find anything. And the state police actually looked again. I think they got local fire departments to come out with ATVs and went to places that the public was not allowed. So campgrounds that were closed. I think there was a couple other places that wasn't open to the public that the state police, obviously, and the DNR could get into. And they went and looked as well. The only scent that they ever got was on the first day. By the time the scent dogs got there, as opposed to the cadaver dogs, by the time the scent dogs got there, Dan's van had already been towed. But they sniffed around his car and they went across the street, like between the street and the cornfields, and walked up and down there. I'm a vet tech. We work with police dogs all the time. I never saw the dogs look like they wanted to go into the cornfield. They just kept running up and down, like if he had been pacing up and down the street. And even though, of course, everybody said, oh, well, he got into somebody's car. Dan was an avid asparagus hunter. And he would walk along those swales and pick asparagus or look for asparagus. And I know that they had just cut those swales not too long ago. And because it was so dry, we're seeing asparagus again. So it didn't look like they went into the cornfield. The dogs didn't look like they wanted to go into the cornfield. And they didn't travel very far, maybe 30 feet, where it looked like they got a scent and then turned around and came back.
Dan had retired a year prior to his disappearance and was thoroughly enjoying his retirement. In August, Janice and Dan had taken their younger son to college. Janice was taking care of her aging father on a regular basis, in addition to working full-time. The couple had recently lost Janice's mother and Dan's father, but there was no indication that Dan was depressed or suffering from any health problems. This is what Janice said about Dan's health and well-being before he disappeared.
He knew that the son that just went away to school was really struggling at school. It's just a hard adjustment, you know, very smart kid, smartest in his class forever since he was a kindergarten, is in a bigger school with a lot of smart kids. And I mean, we had actually called not social services, the assistant dean of students, just to make sure that he was okay. And Dan is the one that called. And Dan was very involved with his son. I mean, he was retired. This will be one full year retired this year. So for my youngest son's senior year, he was at every baseball game. He was at every wrestling meet. He was at every soccer game. You know, he went to chess with him because he was on the state chess team. You know, he was so involved. And for him to put his kids through this, I can't imagine he would do that on purpose. I mean, put me through it. I'll be honest. With the last kid going away to school, we were definitely a family-centric couple. You know, I had a son from a first marriage, so we were a family from the second date. So all of a sudden, we go through the same thing that a lot of empty nesters go through is, okay, well, you have this interest, I have this interest, but we don't have the kids' interest, you know, in between now. I'm not here at least twice a week. Now, that's not a new thing. That's been going. My father had a stroke 2 years ago, so that's not a new thing. So I wouldn't say things were like over the moon happiness at home all the time, but we've been married for 22 years, been together for 24. We have a family. We've been through some really hard times, you know, the loss of our house, the loss of my mother, the loss of his father, that we have all weathered together. I just can't imagine that. I think that the detectives thought two things, that he either killed himself or that he ran away. If Dan was thumbing a ride, nobody would look at him and say, you're an easy mark. He's a 6 foot, 320-pound lumberjack of a man. Nobody was going to take anything away from him easy. You know, so there, I can't imagine, even though foul play is always possible, he was not a kid or a young girl. He was going to put up a fight if you were going to try and take something from him or hurt him. And he's actually a camper. You know, he's hiked into the Grand Canyon. Now, this was a long time ago, but he was still very physically fit. He just had to have a physical when he retired because he went from having life insurance to the school to having independent life insurance. So besides being told that he was overweight and his cholesterol was too high, he was in really good health.
We asked Janice what she thinks happened to Dan.
Every time I try and think of a scenario that makes sense to me, I can't find one. Because if he was going to, you know, hey, you know what, I'm going to take some time to think, I can't imagine that he wouldn't have left him a note for the kids or me. I got to go. I'll see you later. His pension is getting deposited into our checking account. He left all the money that he had at home. If somebody was going to run away, even if he's resourceful, I would think he'd at least take his driver's license and some cash, which he obviously had access to. He didn't even have to go to a bank. And like I said, good health every day. When I wake up, it's like, how do you function? You know, my youngest son asked me if I wanted him to come home, to be home. And I said, no. I said, at least at school you have distractions. I said, I finally went back to work just because I couldn't sit at home and do nothing anymore.
Today, Janice is staying busy focusing on their family, work, and the search for Dan.
You know, I put up flyers. I keep up to date with, you know, all the questions and everything on the Facebook page. And, you know, I'm trying to go on with my life. I don't even know how to do that. And I, you know, and even in talking to my sons and Dan's stepson, but never called him stepson. It was never less than his son because we got married when he was 7. He's getting married in September of next year. And he said, I don't know how I'm going to do that without him. You know, And Dan was really kind of excited about it, even though he's a guy and a pretty guy's guy and not really into it. But he's like, when you guys go test the food, let me go. Like I said, when I last talked to him on that Saturday night, it was a normal conversation. When he talked to his son, it was a normal conversation. When he talked to his sister, it was a normal conversation. There was nothing that gave anybody any clue that he was planning on leaving the next day and not coming home. And I said, you know what? All the indications to me why I didn't come home sooner, because I was at my dad's on that Saturday, was because I didn't want my son to think that I was worried. I was worried. But I'm like, okay, you know what? He could be a million places. He could have gone to his mom's and he was doing something in her basement. You know, he'd go down and cut down trees. He was kind of lumberjacky in that way. That lots of times that he would just go and do. And, you know, the fact that he didn't bring his phone was an accident. So he'll just show up. And they said, when I got home on that Saturday night, DJ and I sat on the front porch and watched the cars go by because we just expected him to just come home with the, oh, I'm, you know, so sorry I left my phone at home. And I said, and once we found his van, I was elated because I was so certain that we were going to find him hurt, falling in the river, bumped my head, knocked unconscious, you know, whatever. Everybody's like, oh, have you searched the rivers? Where's the divers? I said, you know what? Even in talking to the detectives, because the river flows down to a dam eventually, not right away. But he said, and this was confirmed by the Illinois Search and Rescue too, is that the river is so low that he's a guy of a pretty decent size, that if he had fallen and hit his head and even got into the river somehow, he wouldn't float. He's too big. The river's not deep enough. He would just have been there. So, you know, the scenario of falling and hurting himself either in the river, in the woods, or is still my, well, I don't even want it to be my hope anymore because now it's been almost three weeks. But that was certainly my hope in the beginning, is that he'd fallen and hurt himself and couldn't get to a trail or to the road or to someplace, and we would just find him.
By the end of September, Dan had been missing for 3 weeks. Despite exhaustive searches of the state park and nearby areas, no evidence of Dan has been located.
The area is large, and they concentrated their search around where they found his van, which makes the most sense. But there's a lot of this park that they haven't searched yet. And I emailed him and said, can you tell me what hasn't been searched maybe as much? So that if people want to go and search, I can say, you know, go here. And he was very straightforward and said, you know, these people searched here and these people searched here and these people searched here. He's been as helpful as he can be, I think. But I think that, again, I think that they're probably as frustrated as me because, you know, the first day it was like, okay, well, we don't even know where to look. This is a guy that travels without his vehicle. Even though we have a missing persons out on his van, if we don't spot it somewhere, you don't even know what direction to look in. And then we had a direction to look in, and then we found his van, and now we're kind of back at square one. Don't know where to look.
So what happened to Dan Jarski on September 9th, 2018? Did he go to the state park to look for bottles or asparagus and have an accident? Janice told us that Dan is not a hunter and didn't own any guns. But many dove hunters were in the state park that day. No one has reported seeing anyone matching Dan's description. What about the search dogs who located Dan's scent as if he had been pacing near his van? Would he walk away from his whole life and not take any cash with him? We heard Janice tell us that Dan didn't have any health issues and had no reason to walk away from the life he loved. Dan's case is a baffling mystery, but his family isn't giving up. At the time of his disappearance, Dan Jarski was described as 6'2" tall with gray hair and blue eyes. He wears round, wire-rimmed glasses. Anyone with information about Dan's disappearance is urged to call the Kankakee County Sheriff's Office at 815-933-3324 or Detective Brady Bertrand at 815-802-7159. You can follow Dan's case on Facebook at Find Dan Jarski.
I actually asked him specifically the other day because I realized every time that he was giving me any sort of updates at all, I was posting it to the Find Danjarski page. And I figured that he probably wasn't going to release to me any top secret information. But I actually asked him, I said, I just want to make sure that what you're telling me is okay, because everybody is, you know, any updates, any updates, any updates, any updates.
That brings us to the end of episode 143. I'd like to thank Janice for sharing her story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There's a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from California. Thanks for listening.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.